Talk Live.
Well, it looks like they let just anybody in here, and by just anybody, I mean me. And Peak was not near.
I refuse to be the member of any kind of club that would accept me.
What if you made your own club where the requirements were that they were, you know, as close as they could be, you?
Well, I'd have to quit. Because they accept me as a member.
But what if you just were the leader of the club, so to speak, and not necessarily a member? Because you created the club. You're the club owner.
What kind of club has leadership that isn't in the membership?
I mean,
that's pretty screwy.
Like a
sus.
No.
Very sus.
I'm thinking of it. There's a word for it. There's a term for it legally in the business world when you own and run your own company. It's owner-operator. Right? So if you're the owner-operator of the club, you are not a member.
Really?
I mean, by default,
I'm pretty sure
right?
You're wrong, actually.
Right? By default,
yeah,
right? Because you're the owner and the operator of the club, thus you cannot be a member.
No, thus you have to be a member.
No, because you would have to then be subject to membership rules.
No, this is how private membership organizations work. Everyone who's in them is in them, and if you're not in them, then you can't affect them.
But if you're the owner of the PMA, then like you're outside of the membership. Right, you are the decider, as George H.W. Bush put it once. Right, you are the guy who is like, you know, if there's any sort of squibble or squabble or whatever about who is a member and who isn't, and you look through all the rules, you're going to be the tiebreaker because you're the owner operator.
I just want to know what a squibble is.
It's like
I've
a squabble.
Had a squabble.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, but just with an I instead of an A.
Oh, is it littler?
It's just different.
Does it explode like a squib?
I think it's more British.
Oh, like a damp squib.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think like...
So it would have been a squabble, but it turned out to just sort of disappoint you.
I think where we would say Thames, they say Thames. I think it's in that, you know, sort of gray area.
You say Thames?
Well, if you just read it as a word and you've never seen it or heard it pronounced before, it is spelled T-H-A-M-E-S.
Do you call him Thomas as well?
Like, I have been known to do this. Christop her, right? You know, for example, right? You know, like, how does it spelled? You got to pronounce it. Like, phonetically working out a word is a brain exercise that I think everybody should participate in. And then if you're wrong, then you just have to learn, you know, oh, this word's different. It's not Thomas, it's Thomas, you know. It's Ezekiel, not Ezekiel, right? Like, there's...
Easy, Kyle.
Easy, Kyle. Like, oh, wait a minute. We're not there yet. Let's hold off on the violence. Okay, Kyle? It is Free Talk Live, isn't it?
It is.
All right. It's 603-283-6160 if you would like to join us. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass, joining me.
Beakless Mountaineer.
We are expecting Mark Edge, however... he seems to be absent, so
we paid for the whole mark and didn't even get the edge.
We didn't even get the edge, yeah. So he'll either have to make it up to us, or if he decides, oh,
or
crap,
not,
I'm supposed to be on the show tonight, right? You know, if he has that moment wherever he is, hopefully he's all right. I mean, I did try and call him and all that kind of stuff. So
always questionable.
Well, you know, when you're gallivanting. Right? Like, sometimes you're a day-to-day kind of guy.
Well, and I mean, it's not like he has avoided making himself a target of the largest mafia ever to exist, so there's that.
I mean, in ways, I guess he kind of has, but, like, he's survived it anyway.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. So he steps lightly.
He's got some judo about him, you know, that sidestepping that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk tonight about... something we always talk about here on Free Talk Live, cryptocurrency.
Ooh.
Yeah. However,
there have been some things going on.
There have, and I want to address a solution to a commonly thrown out, like, this is why Bitcoin sucks, right? And that comment, this is why Bitcoin sucks, is, well, if the power goes down and the internet goes down, you're effed.
Yeah, as if that wasn't the case without Bitcoin.
I understand. However,
I'm sorry. Have you ever tried living in the wilds? Because the situation where the power goes out and doesn't come back is also the situation where the trucks aren't bringing food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, Homestead. There's that.
Yeah, all you homesteaders out there are like, that's right, we've thought of this.
Yeah, and there's plenty of people who are like, it'll be fine. It's like, really? Where do you get your hay? Oh, that's right. You actually rely on this massive network of connections in order to feed your animals in order to get the food.
Right, right. And, like, there is... I'm thinking of the Dunbar number for some reason. Like, within your personal sphere of friendships and family and influence and that kind of thing, there's likely somebody who either owns a farm, mm-hmm. runs a farm, or knows the guy who owns a farm or runs a farm, like a local farm that you could buy, like, you know, an annual cut of like a cow, a quarter cow, half a cow, something like that, a pig, quarter pig, half pig, right? They have these things that you can purchase where these farms are humanely raised, grass-fed, you know, all the good stuff. Right. Non-GMO. They don't give them the injections. They're not part of the Foster Farms chicken family. You know, that kind of a thing. Right. You can buy meat from independent farmers directly.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggest you do.
Oh, yeah.
Like whoever's listening, even if you don't do it all, if it's not like, oh, it's time to go grocery shopping this week. How are we going to get meat from our independent meat distributor? Well, like, no, like buy a freezer. And buy from them, you know, once a month, once a quarter, something like that. Stock up. You'll save a bunch of money.
Oh, yeah.
Just by having it on hand. And
Yeah, go in together for a half or a quarter beef.
Yeah.
Oh, so cheap, so good.
And then, like, yeah, you know, put it to good use.
Yeah. Like, stock a big freezer and just pull out when you need it.
Yeah. And rotate. That's really all there is to it. Like, I really, really have been thinking about recently the whole, like, the stigma against preppers, right? And like, they're like, oh, well, you guys are just, you're a conspiracy theorist, you guys are afraid. It's like, no, this is just how people actually used to live. Like my grandparents, for example, I'm 51. My grandparents, for example, today.
Being prepared for anything other than the government to solve all of our problems is insane.
My grandparents today would be considered preppers, but in their day, that's just how people lived,
mm-hmm.
right? They would go out in the wintertime and shoot like a deer or two, and then they would butcher it and they would chop it and they would, you know, share it amongst the family. They'd make sausage out of the, you know, the parts that they couldn't, you know, make cuts out of and freeze and all that kind of stuff. And like that was a big part of groceries that year, right? They would hunt whenever hunting was, the government decided whatever season is upon us. They'd go duck hunting. They'd go squirrel hunting, right? I remember eating frog's legs from, like, freshly caught frogs. Like, you know, a group of my uncles went out that day, and they came back, and, like, we got tons of frogs to throw on the grill. Like, grandma's like, great. Let me have their legs, you know? But, like, they would can everything. They would jar everything. When they looked at property, they wouldn't look at property that was just, like, a lawn. They'd look at property with, like, oh, there's an apple tree and a choke cherry tree and a blah, blah, blah. And raspberries grow in sort of the back quarter of the yard. And asparagus grows in sort of the front area near the ditch, near the road, wildly, you know. And so you would have food,
mm-hmm.
right, available to you just as a condition of existence and working your property, right? So you would look at a property for those reasons. And then, you know, you grow in abundance, right? You're like, I'm never going to eat this much zucchini, right, this year, right? So then, you know, you can some of it. You make it into other things, zucchini bread or whatever, you know. Some, and you give those away for your gifts at gift-giving times, mm-hmm. right? Birthdays and bar mitzvahs or, you know, whatever,
well,
all that kind of stuff.
This is actually the origin of both Halloween and Christmas. It's just that Halloween was for the farmers and Christmas was for the ranchers.
Mm.
So during, it's when you would tally everything up. So once all the harvest is in, then you're like, okay, here's how much I need for seed crop next year. Here's how much I need to, you know, not die.
Yeah.
And here's how much I've got extra.
Right.
And you could say, okay, so from my extra, there's a certain amount that I would like to transform from food into goodwill of my community.
Right.
So that next year, if I have a bad crop and my neighbor doesn't, I don't die.
Right.
And in the process of that, you'd have some people that weren't invited to the party, but they'd show up anyway and say, hey, you should give us something.
Yeah.
and this is where trick or treat came from. Like, hand me a treat or I'll do something to your property. And same thing was in the middle of winter, except they counted up the livestock to figure out how much they could feed and how many they had to go ahead and slaughter because there wasn't enough feed to get them through the winter.
That or else in the trick-or-treat, though, is new to me. I didn't realize trick-or-treat was was a threat.
Yes, that's trick or treat. Did you notice that?
I thought it was like, you know, like, I'm going to do a trick, or you can give me a treat.
No, no. It's I have a nasty trick for you unless you give me a treat.
Oh.
Yeah. Also, in the caroling, right, where it's bring it right here, bring it right now.
Yeah, yeah.
We won't go until we get some. So
we
bring it right here, bring it right now.
You can't eat your meat unless... Wait, no.
You can't eat your pudding unless you eat your meat.
Yeah, don't... You can't... Oh, man, I can't remember the lyric now.
Can't have any pudding unless you eat your meat?
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's not even Pink Floyd related.
But yeah, trick or treat, and we won't go until we get some, is because, hey, we notice you're rich and having a party. You should, you know, hand us some snacks so that we don't break the gate on the way out.
Now I want to go crash some, like, you know, wealthy people's party. It just sounds like fun.
Well, I believe that's the base premise for Wedding Crashers, but anyway.
All right, so this from Blockstream.com. This is from their literal website. It's not a news site. It's they're a business. They're a cryptocurrency business. And what they do is this. The Bitcoin blockchain from space, no internet required. Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. I see the look in your eye. You've got a twinkle that is rarely seen around and rarely heard on radio stations who are broadcasting free.
Pretty hard to hear a twinkle.
Oh, they heard it.
Mm.
I saw it was so spectacular. I heard it. The Blockstream satellite network broadcasts the Bitcoin blockchain around the world 24/7 for free, protecting against network interruptions and providing areas without reliable internet connections with the opportunity to use Bitcoin.
Nice.
I just barely stumbled upon this through, like, I don't know, rabbit hole, right? You get on the internet, you start reading stuff, and you're like, oh, what's this? I'll click here on the next thing. Or, like, something will be recommended to you on, like, the YouTube, for example. You click on that, and that'll lead you to another thing, and you click on that. I don't even know how I got here, but I found the website for Blockstream.com, and they're talking about this. And to me, this answers the question of, well, when the power goes down and there's no internet, what are you going to do? Right? I didn't say no power. I said no internet.
Mm.
Right? So there's a, you know, the specific argument about the internet going down and like killing Bitcoin is over, apparently, according to Blockstream.com. Why satellites? Well, the internet is not required. Blockstream satellite broadcasts the Bitcoin blockchain to the entire planet via satellite, reducing Bitcoin's dependency on internet access. Everyone in the world now has an opportunity to use Bitcoin. Massive cost savings. By eliminating cost barriers, people can now receive blocks at no cost, which allows more people to utilize Bitcoin and participate in the Bitcoin network. Network stability. Blockstream satellite provides an alternative method for receiving the Bitcoin blockchain that is not affected by connection failure. This protects users against network interruptions and prevents any full node from becoming isolated or partitioned.
So I'll tell you, apart from the obvious reason that this is just marvelous news, what I really appreciate about this. So at some point, granted, in like 140 years, but still, there's going to reach a point where there is no block reward. And, you know, people are rightfully concerned about like, okay, well, are the fees going to be enough? What if, you know, what if there's something that just drives all of the fees down and then they're not, you know, enough to really pay all those miners? Mm-hmm. And what I've always said that the people who have a bunch of Bitcoin are not going to want it to be worth less. They're going to set up their own miners where even if for some reason there's not fees feeding into it, it's just in their best interest to secure this thing and to make it valuable. And this is, to my mind, a perfect illustration of exactly that. These are the people that are invested in Bitcoin. And here they are, out of pocket, building an infrastructure that is available to everyone.
Right. And this is like, to me, this is pretty fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Like overall, because here is not only the solution to the commonly uttered, well, if the internet goes down, your Bitcoin isn't worth diddly. Right. Not true. First of all, not true. Just that statement in and of itself. Even if the satellite network where you can like have a node that receives a satellite signal with no internet, like, you know, didn't exist, like that's still a false statement.
Yeah. The fact that I can go back to civilization and be rich when I get there is worth something.
Or the fact that civilization can rebuild even in small independent much smaller than like large cities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mostly today's networks are dependent on big cities.
Mm.
So like I come from a telephony background, but also like internet background. And there's also some like old school networking, trains and telegraph that like subscribe to this. Basically, all of the big cities are hubs for internet data or for telephone data or for trains.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like
commerce, everything.
Yes. In and out. Here comes the trade. Here goes the trade.
And this is a perfect illustration of what I've been saying for a while now, that humanity itself has been, for all of our known history, hub-centric.
Yeah.
Like everything has been all roads lead to Rome. It's let's get all of these resources together in one place so that we can do some cool stuff with it. And I think that we've passed the threshold where we are now moving from a hub-centered species to a network-centered species. And this is a perfect example of one of those things that is dispersed rather than hubbed.
And, like, let's just say the entire internet went down and stayed down.
Mm.
Like, okay, give it, I don't know, a couple of weeks, a couple of months before people are building independent mesh networks locally,
mm-hmm.
right? And then it's only a matter of time until a couple of local people decide to string a cable across some, you know, some land space, an acre, a mile, 10 miles, I don't know. Right. But or can, you know, splice into the existing networks that run along like the railroad network.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to take long for these mesh networks to pop up and recreate the internet that existed previously, except maybe better this time.
Right.
Right. And yeah, so like and all of a sudden Bitcoin now has value again. I mean, it's
if
Bitcoin doesn't have value for some period of time when the internet is down, it's going to be a very short period.
Yeah, people confuse the physical infrastructure that is based on technology, which is admittedly vulnerable, with the ideas and the technology itself. Once you've discovered that a thing can be done and how useful it is once it is done, then it gets done even if the current version of it breaks down.
Yep.
Then, okay, let's say that this version of having a global internet breaks down for one reason or another. We're too fond of it. We know it can be done. We know how to do it. And it's too useful to everybody except maybe our leaders or rulers, to be more accurate.
Very good.
For us to leave it undone. So we will absolutely rebuild it because, of course, everyone who engages with that technology gets a tremendous advantage. It's one of those things like, if your society chooses not to use gunpowder, that doesn't go well. In the same way, if your society chooses not to rebuild the internet, it won't go well for you. You will be competing at a severe disadvantage to those that do rebuild these communication networks.
Right, and we've all already talked about sort of the go-betweens, right? So the internet goes down. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, you know, ham radio, CB radio, these things still exist.
Mm-hmm.
The telegraph, old as it might be, still works,
mm-hmm.
right? Regular telephones, depending on what happened to make the internet go down, like landline telephones might still work because they are independent of these cable internet networks, mm-hmm. right? And always have been because, like, I think World War One or something, like, they were like, no, the telephone network has to be separate and its own independent power source because time of war, right, mm-hmm. or something. It was a, you know, it's a mechanism, a security mechanism, right? We want your phone line to be power independent from your electricity. So if the electricity goes out in your neighborhood, you still can call for help, right? And so
that makes sense. I mean, if you have one system dependent on another system, then the lower level system getting taken out takes out all of the systems on top of it.
Right.
So, I mean, it's one thing to have like, okay, well, our water depends on our electricity.
Yep.
Like, okay, you take out electricity, we can't pump water anymore.
Yeah.
That's troublesome. But if we also can't communicate that, hey, we need to get someone out here to fix this so we can, you know, not die of thirst, mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe have our waste carted away from us, that's nice, then, yeah, you're in a much worse position.
Right, right. And so, like a regular landline, not one you get through your cable company or your internet company. They like to bundle these things together.
They
now.
Do.
But like,
because no one would pay for it otherwise.
Right. And like new construction, you're probably SOL. You're not going to get a copper landline installed in your brand new built house. They probably haven't even run copper to the neighborhood that your house has been built in if you're new construction. 603-283-6160 is the number. What do you think about Bitcoin being transmitted globally via satellite with no need for the internet? Your thoughts are welcome. More Free Talk Live is coming up.
So the protection of life, liberty, and property is what the Free State Project is all about. But it's an effort to move 20,000 people who understand.
It's about demonstrating to the entire country
that, yeah, we can have a free market, a truly free market.
Making it just a freer, great place to live.
It's the world's largest voluntarist libertarian community, and it's only getting bigger.
That's amazing, to be able to move to a place where other people like passionately believe in being free and independent.
What the Free State Project is managing to do, though, is to put their money where their mouth is. Physically getting up across the country and saying, let's go someplace and let's demonstrate the power of these ideas. There's a lot of kind of philosophy that surrounds liberty. There's a lot of thinking about it and talking about it. But here in New Hampshire, people are doing it.
101 Reasons Liberty Lives in New Hampshire, a documentary by Free State Project Early Movers. Watch it free at 101reasonsfilm.com. 101reasonsfilm.com.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening and tuning in to tonight's edition of Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live is a live call-in radio program where you can take control, talk about whatever's on your mind. The telephone number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass, joining me.
Peakless Mountaineer.
Who happens to be wearing a Captain Kickass t-shirt.
It's a kickass shirt.
I mean, I support that move, you know? Like, thank you.
I mean, who doesn't want to walk around with a label of Captain Kickass on the front of them? Honestly.
You can find Captain Kickass t-shirts at Amazon.com or over at CaptainKickass.com. We have somebody on hold right now, and let's go to him. This is our TikTok. What's your title, Jeremy?
Correspondent.
TikTok correspondent Jeremy is joining us on the SIP line. You sound great. What's up?
Thank you. Yeah, you just mentioned the phone number. The SIP number is, or whatever, FTL at FTL.onsip.com. And on, if you're listening on TikTok, you can just go to the homepage and tap on the phone icon to call.
Ooh, but, convenient.
Man, that's fancy.
Man, you keep this up, you're going to get an executive producer credit.
Well, we're now at 8,825 followers. We're trying
to get
to 10,000.
Nice.
Okay, now I've got nothing from TikTok today, at the beginning of the show, you were talking about the differences between American English and British English.
It's the boot versus the trunk.
Yeah, so I am from America, but I live in Australia, and my ex-wife, she's Australian. When she was 13, she did...
Hold on, how do you say tower?
I say tower. I still
okay. You haven't been there long enough.
Wait. I have to ask you this:
How do you? 19 years.
Can you say spice rice?
Spice rice.
Now, can you say space race?
Space race.
Oh, you're pretty good. Most Australians. Most Australians say the same thing twice when asked that question. I would like some spice rice, but I'm also involved in the spice rice.
Well, I know you lived in Seattle for a bit, and I come from Washington State, Spokane, and then my family all lives in Seattle.
You can also say Spokane correctly.
That's, dude.
That's where I was born.
I think we're just going to give him the producer credit.
I think so.
Just based on pronouncing Spokane properly alone, I think that gives you a producer credit.
I've noticed living in other places that the northwest of the U.S. seems to have the least vowel sounds. So I say M-A-R-Y, M-E-R-R-Y, and M-A-R-R-Y all the same. And they say them completely differently here. They say they're really different. They sound the same.
Mary, and Mary. Right? Instead of Mary, and Mary.
Yeah. Mary was very merry because she got married. No, it made me think of a story.
Everybody started feeling Mary, but Mary didn't like that, so she left.
my ex-wife is Australian, and she, when she was 13, she did a little homestay in America, in Colorado, like a exchange student thing for a few weeks. And she, so I must start by saying that the word fanny in America is like... It's, you know, you've heard this.
Yeah, no, it's one of those words that we're allowed to use here. It's sort of the opposite of the C word. We are not allowed to say that word.
Yeah.
It has exactly the same meaning and the same level of dirtiness.
Now, here's the thing. If there were an FCC here to ban certain words, then that probably couldn't be on radio or TV, except we don't. People can say whatever words they want on TV and radio in Australia.
Well, it's all trade-offs.
Harrison Ford found that out and ended up on the late night talk show here. They ended up having a Harrison Ford swear jar because when he found out that he could swear on TV, he went for it.
Yeah, but he couldn't have a gun while he was swearing. No. Right. Yeah.
So,
there's a trade-off.
Fanny in America is a polite word for your backside, your bum.
Your booty.
And Australia and elsewhere, it's a dirty word for your front bum, females' front bums, shall we say. And anyway...
Fanny is a word in Australia for front butt on females?
It's also
it's really, I'm telling you, it's the equivalent of the C word, which is not a dirty word over there.
Okay.
I wouldn't... I wouldn't say that it's quite the level of the C word, but yeah, it's definitely not something you'd say in front of your grandmother. Where in America, definitely your grandmother would be the one saying
what if
it.
Your grandmother was named like Fannie Mae or something?
Well, there you go.
And your grandfather was Freddie Mac?
Was named Dick, you got Dick and Fanny.
But, oh, man.
So anyway, and then root in America means like to cheer for your team. And here in Australia, it means to have sex. It's not a dirty word, but
Does Australia call women birds as well? Because in British,
yeah.
Okay, so you
that's
want
interesting.
So you're gonna go out on a Friday night and try and root some birds?
Yeah, that's right. So
wow.
So she's 13
years
old.
The line root for the home team is much dirtier than.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah, well that's where I'm going. She's 13 years old and she's in Colorado staying with a very conservative family from Texas, a Christian conservative family, and the 40 or 50 something year old conservative woman comes home and says, "Oh, our fannies are sore because we were sitting in the stands rooting for our favorite team all day." And she just gets these really, she's 13, Australian, and she doesn't know what it means in America. And she's like, "Well, you're what? Hold on. I know you didn't just
didn't
say
know
what
that
I
was
heard.
An activity you engaged in.
Oh, man.
But I don't know what you're saying.
Language is funny.
That's
two nations separated by a common language.
That's amazing. And like there's like you could break that down into smaller microcosms just by traveling around the United States. And, you know, as you already mentioned, Jeremy, you know, the West Coast has like this weird sort of like they try to avoid the staccato, but like pronounce the syllables. But like here in the Northeast, the traditional accent is like almost removing like the R's and stuff. Right. Like I'm going to park my car around the corner. Right. Like that's,
I know it's weird.
Yeah.
Because the thing that Americans share with Irish people, and sometimes people, when you're not living in America or Ireland, sometimes people confuse Americans for Irish people, which is so weird, but it's because we both pronounce our R's strongly. But Boston, which is made up of a lot of Irish people, is the part of America where they drop the R's. What's with that?
Do not expect me to explain anything about Boston, especially how they speak.
It's definitely different, that's for sure. Like, I wonder if it's a British thing.
Well, and I feel
I wanted to call to talk to Riley, but you weren't there at the beginning. Now I hear you.
Sorry, Riley is here now. Mark Edge has valmorphinized himself. He has valmorphinized himself. And has now, taken over the body of Riley Blake, who is here now joining us on the show tonight.
Well, I look at it this way.
Now that you've occupied Riley, how do you feel about the Free State Project?
I love the Free State Project.
Wait. I'm sorry, Riley. You have to preface everything with, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. and Mrs. America. I mean, I have my criticisms of the Free State Project as an organization, but I love the idea of bringing people together for liberty.
Just not you.
Well, he brought himself here.
I'm here. So
either way, right? Whether he's Mark or Riley.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. So, Riley, I haven't heard you say how your 420 event went.
Oh, I haven't updated anybody on it yet. Should I do that now?
Why not?
No time like the present.
All right, we are on air.
Let's do it now. So it went pretty well. I do play bagpipes, so I brought those and played for everybody while they were smoking their weed. And I had a few hits and had some edibles, and it was a wonderful time.
Shouldn't you rename them bong pipes?
Maybe I should.
Or at least for that day.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, the moment he mentioned it, I'm like, I wonder, is there a way that you could combine these technologies? I'm pretty sure there's not.
At the end of each stem of the bagpipe, so that when you're doing the bagpipes, you're actually also taking a hit somehow.
Oh man, that would be wild! Wow.
Can you fake a cough from the bag itself? While
Jeremy,
you play
what
the
have you done to us? Look at the havoc you've caused.
Way to go, Jeremy! Way to go.
I can't think of bagpipes without thinking of Ross from Friends trying to play them at his sister's wedding.
That's really funny.
Wow.
Oh, man.
All right. So what else is on your mind, Jeremy?
Nothing else. You've got everything that was in my mind.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, man. Call us again next time.
And thank you again for your service.
Of course. Yes, please.
Of course. Absolutely. That's important.
Shout out to Jeremy, our TikTok correspondent.
Yeah. And I especially
building
love
that audience.
You know, the more they fight against TikTok, the more I'm happy that we're involved in it.
Yeah, it does make it nice to be part of some civil disobedience now that a man in a meat suit with a title has banned TikTok. Can you believe the gall of these people to believe that a man in a meat suit has the right or the ability to do that?
Well, I mean, look, we knew they weren't going to let us keep the internet forever. I mean, they've been trying, as they might, to basically dominated by corporations that they control, but that is starting to break down because, you know, eventually
they can't keep everybody in a corral and it scares them.
Right. Right. So you have the TikTok ban, which, I mean, every time that they've tried to ban this thing that I've looked at, it is very easy to expand that to everything. And there's also this internet access service provider thing that is basically requiring people to identify themselves in order to use like virtual private networks and things like that.
Right. They want you to present ID when you log on to the internet.
They
want to
know who's going where and why.
Right. I first heard of this proposal in front of porn sites. So at first, the first time I heard of something like this, it was, we want anybody who's going to log on to insert porn site here.
Pornhub.
Yeah, okay, let's go
with
that
one. Number one.
If you want to log into Pornhub, you must present KYC.
And, you know, shout out to them for, you know, using cryptocurrency.
Right. Here's, well, yeah, but they had
Utah,
to.
Utah.
Oh, yeah,
banned,
because of Operation Choke Point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've just 1.0.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that Utah banned Pornhub last year.
Utah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
where music is not allowed.
From what I've heard, if you go to the website,
I'm kidding,
you get a message saying that this site now requires you to have ID if you want to use the site in the state of Utah.
When I was in Washington State before I came here, so pre-2019, I was using Shapeshift, right? Because you could, right? It was just available. Some guy, Eric Voorhees, put up a website. He's been on this show prior to me being here, but I still follow him because he's still like a leader in crypto tech and stuff like that. He just moved his operation outside of the U.S. because he felt he had to. But there was a period of time where Shapeshift was just, everybody could just access it wherever you were on the internet. And at some point it became sort of a state-by-state thing. So if your IP address was a Washington State IP address on your computer, and you went to shapeshift.io or shapeshift.com, it would be like, sorry, the government has told us that we're not allowed in your state. Like, it specifically called out whatever state you were from because it read your IP address before it presented you the graphic and all that kind of stuff. It was, in retrospect, it was pretty neat. At the time, I was like, this is annoying, right? And that's how I learned VPNs. Right. Because I'm like, I go on and I'm like, hey, I can't get to Shapeshift anymore. And it was like a thing I was able to do the day before.
Right.
Or the day before that and weeks before that. But like one day I was just like, oh, you're in Washington State. You're not allowed. You bad boy. You shame, Captain. You shame. Right. That's what it felt like.
It's just ridiculous that these so-called government gangs want to restrict our flow. They want to restrict where they can take, where we can go on the internet.
Yeah, the arbitrary nature of federal laws really struck home with me when someone pointed out that if in 1933 one man had a gold coin in his pocket and the other a flask of whiskey, one of them would be legal this year and not the other, but that would be swapped by a year from then. And it's arbitrary and it's insane. And they just want to control absolutely everything that people do. And sure, they will say, oh, well, we're trying to stop this, we're trying to stop that. It's never the case. Like, if they wanted to stop child porn, they would stop the FBI from creating it.
Of course they would, but they don't want to stop child porn. It makes marketing child porn to kids so much easier.
Yeah, they are the largest distributor, and they keep adding new material. So know, riddle me that one.
It's like nobody is paying attention. The conservatives think that the traffickers are in the foreign countries, but really the traffickers are the FBI and the CIA and your own government.
Oh, yeah. And that is always something that they use. Oh, well, we're not going after Americans with this. We're going after other people. Then and we just happen to be going after Americans while we do
it. Of course, this is how they define people or whatever words they want to use in their legalese language that most of us don't understand.
So I want to get back to this bit about Blockstream.com and how their solution for no internet for the blockchain for Bitcoin works. Blockstream satellite ground stations known as teleports. Well, will teleportation finally become a thing? We told that that would happen by the year 2000.
Who told you that?
Like the Jetsons, the Simpsons, the Flintstones.
Oh, the Jetsons did have teleporting, didn't they? Then why did they need to drive to work?
Really
flying
poorly,
car or not?
Poorly produced films in public school told us that we'd have hovercraft by the year 2000.
Oh, we do. They're just not legal.
Well, no, like they made it out to be like, no, we won't have cars anymore. Cars will have been replaced.
Well, we would have if they were legal.
Right. Bureaucracy no, we got the hell out
no,
of the
we
way.
Absolutely, right. We absolutely could have replaced ground vehicles entirely by now.
Yes.
Except that bureaucracy has stopped it from occurring.
So what you're saying, Pekles, is government has stood in the way of innovation. We don't have flying cars because the government is standing in the way?
Yeah, the government does not want you to have flying
cars.
They want
a criminal
have
organization standing in the way of progress.
Yeah, they want to have their helicopters, which they, of course, can always get the FAA to approve, and they do not want you to have the same abilities. It's always the case. It's too empowering for the average person, and that is the bane of their existence.
Yeah, so do you guys know why we don't have more like 3D printing manufacturing than we currently do? Because it was cheaper to outsource it to foreign countries than it was to build the mechanisms necessary to 3D print materials.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Right? Like you could still hire people in, you know, third world countries for, you know, a dime a day or whatever it was. I'm making stuff up here. I don't know the actual figures. But it was less expensive for a company to have something manufactured or partially manufactured in a third world country by paying them, you know, wages that made them wealthy at that point, but like we were laughable by us, right? So as opposed to building the mechanisms that were necessary to eliminate that part of production and make it better with 3D printing. So that like...
Well, that sounds like a temporary change right there.
Right, but it hasn't happened. And then what happened with the technology, of course, is the same thing that always happens. It becomes stifled because now the bureaucrats are like, well, we'll need an agency to oversee the regulations of the 3D printer, whatever it is, right? This is how government always operates. Yep. Whenever a new technology becomes popular,
they got to regulate it. They got to regulate it.
Be like, oh my gosh, this is unsafe.
Yeah. This is making people too powerful. Can't let them have that.
Right.
Can't let them have cheap housing. How are we supposed to run our money scam? Yeah.
Amen. So Blockstream.com, how it works. Blockstream satellite ground stations, known as teleports, participate in the Bitcoin network and transmit blocks to geosynchronous satellites. Geosynchronous satellites orbiting at an altitude of 35,786 kilometers receive the signal from the Blockstream and broadcast it across a wide portion of the Earth. Anyone in the coverage area with a small satellite antenna and an inexpensive USB receiver can receive these blocks and ensure their node is always in sync. And then they show like a coverage map, which appears to be most of planet Earth.
Nice.
It's amazing that Bitcoin and cryptocurrency can be transmitted through satellites because, you know, like you were saying earlier, you know, the network's going to go down. Someone's going to find a way to connect to those satellites up there. And
Bitcoin is network agnostic. It doesn't care. It will run on any network. If all you have is of the terrestrial train system in the United States. It doesn't care. It'll find a way to run on that.
Right. Yeah, no, if you are down to the Pony Express, this is such a powerful technology that even the most inefficient version of it, because it makes an absolutely sound money, will give you an advantage.
It's going to take longer. So, for example, I want to pay Riley. Riley is four kingdoms to the west, right? I hire you, Peakless. You're the Peakless Express, right? I write some information down on a piece of paper. I put it in an envelope. I put the kick-ass seal on it in wax or whatever, and I send it to you, or I give it to you, and I'm like, deliver this to Riley. And you do. You traverse the countryside. You go four kingdoms over, and you get to Riley's kingdom, and you're like, here you go, Sir Riley. This is from the captain.
Oh,
and
thank
he opens it up. He says, thank you. Tell Captain thanks, whatever. He opens it up.
Captain, Riley says thanks.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Riley. You're welcome. I'm beautiful. You're welcome. Riley then updates his ledger with this new information, and the transaction has completed.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right? Like, so Bitcoin doesn't care what kind of, it can transmit over the, like the old Pony Express mail system.
Yeah. Now, that being said, the particular network that you use will change the kinds of distributed ledgers that emerge.
Right.
So that, like, yeah, if you then end up back in a situation where you can talk to the rest of the world, they probably still have the ones that were running in the first place, and you have a fork. Yes. You have this local fork that, like, okay, well, we've had to do this inefficient way of communicating with each other.
Yeah.
So because of that, we're not going to have the absolute number one amount of hash power because we haven't had that kind of computing power. But this has been effective for us, so we're not going to just give it up either.
Yeah.
So now we have a fork, and that fork will be worth whatever it's worth in comparison to the existing blockchains.
All you need within your local community is someone who has some accounting skills, some good accounting skills, right? But like some accounting skills to update their ledger, right? Cryptocurrency technology is based on the traditional ledger, right?
It's been made simple that way.
Right. The green and white, you know, paper that's, you know, it's two things, and like as long as they balance out, everything's cool.
Yeah, it's just three entries instead of two.
Right, exactly. And
the third entry being time.
And so it can be done by like some scribes with some math skills, right? Right? Like from community to community. You show up at Riley's kingdom with this thing. Riley goes, hey, scribes, we have this new data. And they update their local copy of the ledger, quote unquote, and now all of a sudden they're up to date. It's not going to be instantaneous transactions like it is on the internet, but the transactions still compute. They still balance. They still are trustless, unlike statist technology that relies on centralization and a central authority to issue and make sure the currency is, quote, safe, unquote.
And because you have this system where it's available to everyone all the time, you don't have this central set of people who have all of the money, making it so that one penny a day is actually really, really valuable to these people over here, but not valuable to me.
603-283-6160. Do you believe that if the internet went down, that Bitcoin would be useless? If so, give us a call. More Free Talk Live is coming up.
Protection. Eleutheromania. The insatiable desire for freedom.
Filibuster. Police state.
It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Free Talk Live.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in to Free Talk Live. The telephone number here in the studio, should you wish to call, is 603-283-6160. Again, 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, it is myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass, joining me.
Riley.
And Peakless Mountaineer.
Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Are you tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar?
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah. You can live your life on Dash with bitrefill.com, where you can buy gift cards from big retailers, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and easy to use Dash. You can learn more at dash.org. That's dash.org. All right. We've been talking about, well, a bunch of things, but we've been trying to get through this bit from blockstream.com/satellite, where it answers the question, what happens to your Bitcoin? Is your Bitcoin worthless if the internet goes down? Well, it turns out, no. They got some satellites going on out there, and all you need is a special node with a radio antenna to receive a transmission of the block. We've learned that these ground stations are known as teleports. They participate in the Bitcoin network and transmit blocks to geosynchronous satellites. Anyone in the coverage area with a small satellite antenna and an inexpensive USB receiver can receive these blocks and ensure that their node is always in sync. Additionally, each Blockstream satellite teleport also receives blocks from other teleports around the world to ensure the teleports themselves do not become partitioned. So for those who aren't technical, it's just a check and balance against the rest of the network to make sure nobody's cheating.
And that's the nice thing about the Bitcoin network is there are checks and balances.
Mm-hmm.
As people send their transactions through the network and receive transactions, there are checks and balances to make sure everything is up to date.
And I want to point out checks and balances that actually work.
Right.
Unlike the checks and balances that supposedly exist in the political system that do not work.
Yeah, it turns out when you investigate yourself, it's very easy to find that you're not guilty of any wrongdoing.
Huh, weird. So regarding the Blockstream.com satellite network, the entire network forms a ring around the planet to ensure that the Bitcoin network has full redundancy. And they, of course, cite some detailed maps for where you can, you know, where the satellite coverage currently exists. You can get one of these inexpensive USB slash radio nodes for yourself. And then they also have a link to visit them on GitHub. GitHub project, visit our open source project and get support using our software. So on top of all of the things that we've talked about so far, that it solves the, oh, the internet's down problem of keeping the blockchain up to date. It's open source.
Right.
like that's the icing on the cake for this thing. Like, it solves this problem. It renders the whole hopelessness of like, oh, the internet's down and now I'm poor. Like, no, you're not.
You can create, well, I don't know if you can create money generally, but at least if you know how Bitcoin is set up, you can find a way to restart a seed somehow, if you will.
Yeah, and one thing that I really love about this is, so, you know, there is kind of a really disgusting entanglement between the internet as it exists and the American military system that basically created it. And one of the things that this allows, so when you have this independent system everywhere on Earth that allows transmission of money, transmission of value, you have the ability to create infrastructure wherever it is useful. So even if somehow there's like, oh, well, we flipped the switch on this and now the internet can only be done with our explicit whitelist permission. Okay. We now have the ability to very easily fund our own ability to build a better internet that is not subject to all of your regulation.
Right.
And the nice thing about building a better internet is that we can circumvent the government and go beyond their rules and regulations and build our own networks.
Right. And the simple truth of the matter is that government regulation is responsible for the majority of the poverty of Earth. And that's been that way for a good long time.
Also responsible for the majority of death.
Yeah. So anywhere where we would like productivity to work, we can just fund it into existence now. Anywhere where we want to be away from the death machine, it's available now.
Yeah, and it's only going to continue growing. Dear anyone, like, seriously, if you're listening to this program.
Mr. and Mrs. America.
If you're listening to this, particularly if you work in some government capacity, just quit your job now because you're going to be better off getting a head start. The blockchain, Bitcoin, cryptocurrency is coming for your job. Cryptocurrency, the blockchain specifically, will replace all of the bureaucracy that mankind needs with decentralized, autonomous record keeping, making you obsolete. So you might still be collecting a paycheck right now, today. A paycheck is getting ready to go bye-bye. Now, two things happen when governments persecute cryptocurrency. One, they drive the cryptocurrency further underground. And two, the further underground they drive the cryptocurrency, the more innovation happens.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they just leave cryptocurrency alone, innovation happens of its own accord,
mm-hmm,
because people are still trying to solve problems and compete in a marketplace. But once you drive it underground, now you're incentivizing them to solve the problem that government has just created,
right,
by driving it underground.
Yeah.
And they always do. Like, there's a solution to everything government has ever done against cryptocurrency. And it's just about the developers going, oh, yeah, we can fix that. We'll just route over here and change, yeah, the thing and blah, 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 and it's done.
Well, and this is a big part of that whole movement from the hub to the network. See, a hub is a central point of failure. So you have something to attack, something to destroy, something to regulate and control.
And that's what they want. They want hubs where they can take them out and make people reliant on their own systems to communicate. If they can take out a hub, then they can say, oh, we're going to build our own networks and whatever, and the people have to come through us to communicate again.
Right. But the thing is that regulation only slows these things down.
Right.
So, all right, take, for example, Coinbase, for instance. Okay, sure, here is a centralized point that you can, in fact, regulate. However, if you regulate them, that means they have to spend time, energy, money, and resources on obeying you. That means that everything else that does the same job in a decentralized way has that much of an advantage over Coinbase. So when they compete with this central thing that you're trying to use to control this network, you're actually enhancing our ability to circumvent that control. It's an anti-fragile thing. And this is the fundamental shift that they are not prepared for.
Yeah.
Every attack that they make on centralized points, whether it's to destroy them or to control them, only gives us a greater incentive to go around them.
Absolutely. And they want to control us, it seems like, by the way they're attacking the money system, by the way they're attacking cryptocurrencies, by the way they went after the founder of this show and, yeah, put him in a cage for buying and selling Bitcoin. We are now living in a world where they're going to attack the money system by saying, oh, well, you can't have a custody, you can't have a Bitcoin wallet with your own keys now. We want the keys.
Yeah, they're going to, mm-hmm, demand you register.
We want your keys.
They want you to register your Bitcoin. So if you have some Bitcoin already and nobody knows about it, try and keep it that way, in my,
yeah,
opinion.
Yeah.
Because they will do, it's kind of like, when they confiscated the gold,
mm-hmm,
right here in the U.S., they sent out a message like, please bring your gold to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll give you some money for
we'll
it.
We'll give you a certificate that says you put that much in it, but we need to be holding on to it.
Yeah.
In the same way they want you to register your Bitcoin. You have Bitcoin, and register it.
And, you know, fun fact, you brought that gold in at $20 an ounce. Mm-hmm. We just changed the price to $35.
Right.
So if you want to buy gold back when it becomes legal,
you have to pay more again. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And that's how government works.
And here's the real beauty of the difference, though. Okay, so when they confiscated everyone's gold. Okay, everybody knows it's illegal to own gold now. So that means your grocer, your landlord, they cannot be seen accepting gold for goods and services. So immediately that network power of payment is destroyed.
Yeah.
However, with Bitcoin, number one, you don't see anything. It all gets carried on behind the scenes. You have no idea who this wallet or that wallet actually belongs to. And number two, the very essence of it is trade. Like, with gold, you can have a thing and never trade it. With Bitcoin, you cannot have that thing and never trade it. That's not how this works.
Yeah.
The nature of it is that it cannot end the ability to trade it, and it still exists.
Right.
And at this point, they've basically realized that they can't destroy this thing. I mean, they attempted to drive the price low enough that it would just start collapsing last time, because there is a four-year cycle to these things, and it's not completely exclusive to Bitcoin. But there's definitely a timing to this issue, sure, which is when they destroyed FTX, that was a very cleverly timed attack. So they attempted to suppress this price as much as possible, and they drove it lower than it was expected to go, and it simply wasn't enough.
Maybe that's why the price is kind of low ever since the halving, is they're trying to keep it low by making people afraid of Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah. Right now we have the incentive from BlackRock and, you know, Fidelity and all of them. They want this price as low as possible so that they can pick it up before they sell it to everyone else.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Right. It sure sounds that way.
Right. So, and the beauty of cryptocurrency is that it never closes. Right. There's no opening and closing.
Right, there's no opening bell at 8 a.m. Right. New York time. There's none of that.
Right. It doesn't take weekends off.
No, it doesn't. It keeps trading around the world every single day.
Right. So when BlackRock wants to sell you the ETF, that happens during the day. Because BlackRock does keep bankers' hours, but when they want to buy the Bitcoin to back it, they'll do that in the middle of the night so that they don't drive the prices up while the prices are being driven up. It's very clever. My point, though, is that they can no longer destroy this, and they've basically given up trying, with the exception of, like, Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
But, I mean, essentially, you can't make it illegal without making all information illegal. So there's very little chance of actually even making an honest attempt at destroying this. But what they are trying to do is control it. Put it behind an ETF. You can't be trusted with this power.
Right, yeah.
We gotta have the power trusted. Because we are the power.
Yes. We are verified investors. Well, what does that mean? Well, I'm accredited. What does that mean? I'm really rich.
We must remind everyone why they need us.
Exactly.
And so, that's why government is so dangerous, is they use violence, they use threats, they use coercion to say, we need to show you why you need us, because you will depend on our survival and you will like it.
Yeah.
And that's what they do every single time.
And the sad truth is that it's working right now, because the fact is that people do not want to be responsible. And
people,
I can't really blame them, because they've grown up in a circumstance where being responsible was a detriment.
Sadly, public schooling, corporate / government fascist control over media has conditioned the regular human being across the globe, but also in the United States, to subscribe to a fear-based existence.
That's absolutely right.
And so, you know, as they put out their propaganda on, you know, your favorite news channel, whether it's CNN, NBC, ABC, Al Jazeera, you know, CNBC, whatever it is, whatever the channel it is that you're watching, it's all propaganda from, you know, a slightly different perspective, but
absolutely,
it's all propaganda,
yep,
all of it's propaganda, and it is conditioning you to exist in a constant state of fear, so that when they put out something that you find particularly fearful, you react in their desired way.
They want to keep us afraid, because when we live in fear, we're easily controlled.
Yeah.
Fear,
bingo.
Fear and anger go hand in hand, because when people are afraid, they're going to get angry.
I couldn't have said that any better. Yeah. People who are afraid are easily controlled.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is that holding on to 12 words is too much responsibility for the majority of people right now.
Yeah.
It's sad, but it's true. And that line of being willing to go, okay, I will do this for myself, is going to be the line in the sand of who has the advantage over the next century and who doesn't.
Yeah, very, very likely. We do have some news regarding the Crypto Six. The NBC Boston series, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. Something about
Life, Liberty, and the pursuit of New Hampshire.
Yes, thank you. That's it.
Released two new episodes yesterday or the day before. Might have been yesterday. And episode number 12 is the part two of the Crypto Six. So they did a part one, I think episode 10, when they released the other portion of them.
Yeah.
And so they just released 12 and 13. Episode 12 is about the Crypto Six, and episode 13 is more focused on the Free State Project.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched it. Have you guys watched?
I have not.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like the biggest thing is just the federal agencies did not want to comment until sentencing was over.
Right.
And now that they've commented, okay, here's your episode. So here's the other side of it.
What I don't like about it is these federal agents are put in. It's kind of like a.
We are the heroic protectors of people who wanted to spend their own money when we knew that was not a right choice for them.
Like, the thing opens well enough with Ian giving an eloquent questioning, a Socratic method, if you will, saying, just look at this building.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, people sit in pews and, you know, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. And, like, it's a church and people don't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it starts out with him just pointing out, like, that, yes, if you are a statist, you are part of a cult.
Yeah.
It is a cult. It's a religion, right? These guys come out with black robes on, you know, you have to follow all of this ridiculous sort of procedure that reminds me of very cult-like behavior,
mm-hmm.
stuff you find in religions, et cetera, mm-hmm. and so on.
Yeah, I mean, when discussing religions, a lot of people dismiss the fact that there has always been a tradition of games, gamifying the supernatural concepts that are espoused by every given religion. And what is it? It is a court. And just like a basketball or tennis court, there is a game that is played according to traditional rules.
Mm.
And in that game that is played according to traditional rules, it is a battle of good and evil in which good always wins.
Yeah.
Because it's a religion.
Maybe that's why Christians are cheering on a war, because they believe they're the good guys. And if they cheer on this war with Israel and fund Israel, then maybe their God is going to come back and save them. And to me, that's a really sad way to look at bringing your God back.
Mm. Well, it's funny how the good guys always win in history.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if that's what you believe, then of course you're going to cheer on war. War is just another opportunity for the good guys to beat the bad guys, because that's what happens every time.
Absolutely. They're the good guys, though.
Yeah. Never mind the fact that if you drop a nuke on innocent people, you're the bad guy.
Yeah.
Always and forever.
The thing that I really didn't like about this episode two was the filming techniques that they used for the bureaucrats, the prosecution, right? Never mind their personal demeanors and all that kind of stuff. It's interesting to me, like, they waited until Georgiana, one of the lead prosecutors, was fully pregnant to film her mm-hmm. segment. And so, you know, you have this, like, oh, she's just a pregnant woman trying to make a difference, right? Mm-hmm. You have this, like, sort of, you know, I don't know, like, they tried to make
an emotional appeal.
It's the defense of the pastoral. That's fundamentally what it is. See, we are the side of defending women and children against devious people like you.
And I will say that
The whole thing has always been this conflation between using cryptocurrency and romance scams.
The three people who they presented on, like, the side of the government, the prosecution, with the exception of Georgiana being pregnant, the other two were... women, although I suspect, based on their, you know, hairstyle and attire, that they are not hetero women. So, like, there's this whole, like, visual thing here about, like you're saying, about, like, hey, we're protecting the sort of the underground, the unaccepted, right? You know,
yep.
That
they
kind
gotta
of
make
thing.
It look like they're
but they used these camera catering. These camera techniques. So, like,
yeah,
the first time I remember realizing that I've been being techniqued, right, was watching the televised trial of Oliver North back in like the early 90s. Right. And so what they did is they would position the cameras down below to look up at the judges and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they would position the cameras above to look down upon Oliver North.
Oh, that's really interesting. That's definitely
right.
Visual manipulation right there.
Right. Yeah. It absolutely
but
it
what
is.
What would I know about visual manipulation?
Although, to be fair, that is the structure of the courtroom. That's part of the show.
Absolutely. And, like, of course, whoever's producing this, you know, whatever it was, not CNN, but what's the...
NBC, I believe it
no,
was.
What's the channel
NBC
that
Boston.
Shows all the courtroom stuff all the time? All
Congress, C-SPAN.
C-SPAN, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Whoever was producing for C-SPAN at that time was like, hey, I'm just going to play up on this a little bit. Look, you know, they're up and he's down and, yep. like, you know, that kind of thing. So it had an effect on public opinion.
Yeah, it's the same reason that a lot of convenience stores will make it so that their tellers are behind the counter uplifted, so they appear taller, so that there's a little bit more of an intimidation factor for anyone who's thinking about robbing the place, is because they want them to be literally above you. It's the same reason that the judge sits in an elevated position above all of the people who are supposedly his bosses in the pews who are observing this very religious interaction.
People need to realize the government is just a terrifying religion.
Truly.
It certainly is. 603-283-6160 is the number if you'd like to call. If you've seen episode 12 of this NBC Boston series and want to comment on it, more Free Talk Live is on its way. Stay tuned.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction, and its features ensure Dash is undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible, and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their Chainlocks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering a Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Yes, we are professionals. It's Free Talk Live. That guy thought it was funny. He said, ha-ha.
Are we professionals, though? I mean, really? Are we really professionals?
Yeah, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess we're doing a radio show. We might as well
be. We are. It's nationally syndicated in the whole nine yards, man. I mean,
it's true.
You know, we're sitting here in a bona fide radio studio at the Free Talk Live.
But
know,
our occasional
location.
Suffering of technicalities is just part of our charm.
Yeah.
It's the way we do a show. We do it live, after all.
We do it live.
How are people supposed to know that we're not, you know, secretly funded by, well, anybody?
Like, this
Except
is the evidence.
We occasionally screw up.
Yeah, that's how you know we're not funded by really anyone.
We're not funded by the government. We're not funded by the BBC or National Public Radio.
We're not secretly funded by anybody.
Secret.
We are openly funded.
Overtly funded by the AMPS program,
mm-hmm.
Which stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. The AMPS program can be found over at amps.freetalklive.com. freetalklive.com if you would like to help advertise, market, promote, and support this show. That money primarily goes to trying to get us onto more radio stations. We only ask for $5 a month. You can give more than that. Today's amplifier is Keith Boone. Keith Boone is a gold level amplifier, which means he actually gives $10 a month instead of the minimum of $5, because arguably he believes that spreading the message of liberty is so important, he's willing to put his money where his mouth is. And since Free Talk Live broadcasts liberty, peace, prosperity, every time it's on the air, he feels like his $10 is worth it. So if you'd like to help us get on more radio stations and be broadcast in more avenues and all that kind of stuff, please visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com. Thank you again, Keith Boone. We appreciate you. All right, we've been talking about the solution from Blockstream, where they have some satellites out in space rotating around that communicate with these terrestrial devices that continuously update the blockchain, Bitcoin blockchain, and thus sort of solves the problem of, well, is Bitcoin even going to be worth anything once the government takes the internet down? Yeah. Because we've already proven that cryptocurrency can be transmitted over any network, radio, telegraph, telegram, television, any of the telas, right? Yeah, except for the Telecaster, that's a guitar. But if you played the right notes to make the right mathematical equation, you could write a riff that is your 12 words of the phrase.
Oh,
and, you know, therefore, we already know that people can embed seed phrases inside of paintings, like fine art and stuff like that, because it's been done.
Come to think of it, every note is, in fact, a very, very poor wallet. Because every note has a frequency,
right,
and that frequency is a number. And as we've discussed previously, every number is a wallet. They're just not very good wallets because they can be guessed.
Yeah, I say this all the time, and I'll say it again because I think it bears repeating. Music is the language of emotion for human beings, right? And it's, you know, language agnostic. It doesn't care what you speak. People who don't speak the language and hear a good song go, man, I like that song, regardless of their language. So music crosses the language barrier. Cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, for example, is the language of money.
Of value.
Of value. The language of the transmission of value, of barter, right? It is the expression of value. In the same way music is the expression of emotion, cryptocurrency, the blockchain, is an expression of value.
And this is why it's so important for us to understand that Bitcoin does have value, because it's created for this purpose to convey value.
Right.
And what's extraordinary is that both of them are ultimately math.
Yes.
Yeah. Like both. So correct. With music, I mean, so you've got, you know, meter and time and all of that.
Yep.
But even the notes themselves, fundamentally what we recognize about them is their ratio to each other.
Yes.
And it's because they have a ratio that is not too simple and not too complicated that it comes through as music instead of just noise.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that I find very, very compelling about cryptocurrency, blockchain, Bitcoin, you know, privacy currencies, Monero, spending currencies, Dash, all that kind of stuff, is that there have been many, many books written on anarchist philosophy, right? Old books from olden times, from 100 years ago, et cetera, and so on, where, like, you know, we're not sitting here, we're not the first people to talk about, like, decentralization.
Shout out to Lysander Spooner.
Absolutely. And all that kind of thing. But I find it really, I find it funny, like, humorous, that mathematics proves anarchist theory with Bitcoin, with cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Right? Like, anarchist theory for the longest time was, like, ridiculed, and it still is, I mean, but, like, it's growing in popularity because, well, the internet, more people have access to more information. An idea like this is going to grow, where, like, it's not about having no rules. It's about having no rulers, right? And so within that, the only way for people really to begin to hop on board with anarchist philosophy is for there to be anarchist infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time on planet Earth, Satoshi Nakamoto gave us that.
Yeah.
Verified by math.
That's the nice thing about being in New Hampshire is we're working on, hopefully trying to work on, building networks and systems outside the government, like money systems, barter systems, all sorts of things, so that when things break down, and they inevitably will, we're all practiced at trading gold and silver. We're all practiced at trading barter for goods and services, or practicing using cryptocurrency, because cryptocurrency is going to convey value across the world.
And does so accurately.
Yeah. And it's truly marvelous that cryptocurrency by its nature is the proof of anarchist philosophy, specifically as you put it, rules without rulers.
Right.
Like, we don't all answer to Satoshi Nakamoto.
Right, yeah, he's not like, our god.
Like, for all I know, and it's kind of my going theory, probably dead, I don't know, but even if Satoshi Nakamoto comes back and says, nope, these are the new rules, okay, that's nice, we're not going to follow them.
Right, yeah.
We're already following these rules because, like, these rules work for us.
Or he gets a statist bug up his ass. He's like, Satoshi for president.
Yeah, right? That'd be really bad.
Like, no, Satoshi, sorry. It's like when they talk about these artists, they're like, oh, he died so young, he had so much more to give. How do you know?
Right.
How do you know he wasn't done? That was it. That was all he had to give before he died. How do you know that he wouldn't have, like, tried to give more, but it would have been horrible? Mm. And everybody would have ridiculed him and, like, been like, why didn't he make good stuff like he did when he was younger, before he, you know, supposedly died?
That is what tends to happen with artists.
How do you know he's not going to be playing a Super Bowl halftime show with, like, Janet Jackson or something? You know what I mean? Like, hashing out some oldies that, you know, only the old fuddy-duddies remember.
Yeah.
We don't know. So.
But, yeah, the fact that here's this emergent system where we all follow the same rules, not because we will be forced to, not because we will be put in a cage for not doing so, but because we choose to. It is in our benefit. We are paid by each other to follow the same set of rules. And it really is that simple. And if you want to know, well, how are you going to arrange every other complicated thing? Who will build the roads? Like that. That's how we're going to do it. We're going to find whatever set of rules we can best agree to.
So, dear governments around the planet, you can arrest Ian Freeman, you can arrest Aria DeMezzo, you can, raid...
Try and shut down the show.
Yeah, you can raid this studio, you know, another couple of times, whatever it is. It's not going to matter. People are not the thing that you are rallying against. You're rallying against a technology that's unstoppable.
Yeah.
And by persecuting people who are adopting this technology, you are revealing yourself as the evil ones in this particular equation.
Yeah. And the other side of this equation is the information.
Yeah.
So right now, I mean, who listens to CNN? Who listens to Fox? No one listens to mainstream media. Their viewership numbers are in the absolute toilet.
Well, it's all the old people.
The only ones that listen to them at all are those that have done so for the last 40 years.
Yeah, if you're over like 65 or whatever, you're probably CNN, NBC, Fox News, right? You know, you're watching one of those three. Maybe some ABC in there, right?
If you're even bothering to do that. Whereas the vast majority of people are listening to independent sources and going out and seeking their own information.
God, I hope so. Because, like, when I, we talked last week a little bit, we just touched on, like, I still watch the NFL football, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I do, if I don't catch it once the game's over, which is mostly what I do, and then I get to see it commercial free. But if I watch the game while it's being presented live, I am subject to commercials.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have been off of the commercial IV, you know, the heroin that is, you know, commercials that, like, when I go home, I don't turn the TV on just to have it on where it's like playing whatever and playing commercials and playing whatever show. No. I'm very on purpose about
selective.
What I watch. I'm very selective and on purpose. Like, no,
intentional.
Intentional. Yes. Thank you. I like to say on purpose because I think it
purposeful.
Resonates. it resonates with sort of the common man, if you will.
Some people like to have their television on to drown out the noise of their own mind, it seems.
Right. Well, and so what happens if you turn your television off, or as the oldest of the memes say, kill your television, right? Because it is programming. I'm always sort of taken aback by how I feel after I'm advertised to during an NFL game, after having not been advertised to in the rest of my life. No, I'm just like, man, no wonder nobody can see this. They haven't been away from it long enough. It's a thing.
They're still in the system. They're still partaking in its pernicious nectar.
Right. Yeah, you're talking to fish about water, and they have no idea what you're saying.
Right, and they're like, what? But no, we must swim upstream.
Yeah. No, it was in order to...
It's what we do.
Yes.
Like, in order to discover that I had a problem with gluten, what did I have to do? Well, I had to cut it out for a while and then see how I felt adding it back in. Because it was just part of my world. Of course I eat gluten. Everyone eats gluten. It's in sandwiches, it's in burritos, it's in everything.
I thought you had to fight other gluten-esque people with, like, swords so you could be the glutenlander.
The glutenoids.
The glutenlander.
That'd be funny.
It's like Highlander, but with gluten. Or gluten-free, I guess.
It's a gluten battle.
But yeah, and with a lot of things like lactose intolerance or whatever, the way that you discover that these are poisonous to you is by cutting them out and then seeing how you feel when you add them back in. And the same is true of mental poisons.
Yeah.
Cut these things out of your life just for a while and then see how they make you feel. And I do mean feel, because there is a wisdom in the body that it reacts poorly when it is being attacked.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you feel good when you're exposed to these things that have a slow drip, drip, drip toxicity to you. But you won't notice if that's your everyday.
So the NBC Boston people put out the two new episodes, one about the Crypto Six, episode 12, and the other one focuses, episode 13, focuses a bit more on the Free State Project. You can find that over at NBCBoston.com. I've posted a link to that on all of our social media here tonight if you want to check it out. But I want to talk about this from BitcoinMagazine.com. Bitcoin mixing service Samurai Wallet founders arrested, charged with, a drum roll please, money laundering.
Oh, really? Why are they charged with money laundering?
Is it because they laundered money?
Whose money are they really laundering, though?
The U.S. DOJ also seized Samurai's web servers and domain and served seizure warrants for Samurai's mobile app on the Google Play Store.
Wow.
So, just so everybody understands, this is, or at least was, a centralized service.
Mm-hmm.
A wallet provider called Samurai that had built into its wallet what is known as crypto mixers.
Yeah, a coin mixing service. Yeah.
Yes. Because they're centralized, the Department of Justice was able to seize their web servers, their internet domain, and serve some warrants to remove their mobile app from the Google Play Store, apparently.
That is absolutely insane.
In a significant development, Keon Rodriguez and William Longren Hill, founders and CEO of the privacy-focused Bitcoin wallet and mixer, Samurai Wallet, have been arrested and charged with money laundering and operating an unlicensed money-transmitting business.
Hmm.
Oh, wow. The same sort of charges that they brought up on Ian, money laundering and unlicensed money transmission.
Huh.
So what you're saying is you didn't give me a cut.
That is what
I was supposed to get a cut of this. I was supposed to get approval and veto power over what you were doing when what you were doing was software? Oh, which we have in a court of law determined was speech already.
Well, the court of law has yet to recognize cryptocurrency as speech.
Which is pretty amazing given the fact that it's software.
And it's zeros and ones. And they've ruled that software is speech, but they haven't ruled that cryptocurrency is speech.
Well, people like to look at Bitcoin as money. And so they want to treat it as though it's money and get their cut.
They like to have it both ways, you see. If they looked at it as money, then they couldn't tax it the way that they do. So, like, when you go to, you know, Mexico or Europe or whatever, you have to pay that guy to get whatever the local currency is. But then you don't have to calculate, this is trending upward or downward against the U.S. dollar and pay capital gains tax on every purchase that you make. No, it's nothing like that, because they realize how commerce would grind to a halt if they had to calculate every single cent that turned into a peso. Mm. So they don't treat currency like that. They don't treat money like that, except for our money, except for the money of the people.
Yeah. These charges stem from allegations that Rodriguez and Hill, through their company Samurai Wallet, facilitated over $2 billion in unlawful transactions and allegedly laundered more than $100 million in criminal proceeds. This activity primarily involved transactions from illegal dark web markets, as well as schemes to defraud decentralized finance protocols, the DOJ stated. The defendants are accused by the DOJ of developing, marketing, and operating a Bitcoin and cryptocurrency mixer that provided a platform for criminals to engage in large-scale money laundering. If that were true, the government would never even try and shut them down. Government would be their biggest subscriber, their biggest user, biggest advocate of their services, because we all know government is the biggest criminals.
Yeah. Quick question. Guess what the absolute hands-down number one source of money laundering? Oh, the dollar.
The US dollar. Yes.
Like, without a question.
Yes, no question.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, you're doing practically all of the money laundering on the face of the earth.
Yep.
Because you produced this tool, and then people used that tool to launder money.
Yeah. Let me guess.
So,
let me guess.
When are we putting Jerome Powell in jail? When does Janet Yellen get her court?
How about never? They're never going to get their day in court because they're the elite. The elite get a pass in this world for some reason.
Well, and I hate to say this, but in this case, that's the just thing to do. Like, sure, they're producing a tool that is then being misused, but that isn't the same as committing the misuse.
Right.
$2 billion in transactions with an unlicensed money transmitter means $2 billion flowed without any oversight from whomever to wherever. Yeah! That's what it's supposed to do!
It's all about freedom, ladies and gentlemen.
You mean like they had like security in their person and effects? And like you couldn't just take their papers? Or documents, or it's almost like you were following the Bill of Rights for a second. Oh man, we gotta shut that down.
Because of the company's disregard for regulation. I don't know what that means.
Did
Samurai Wallet ever go, you know what, we're just disregarding all regulation?
Well,
like I don't remember that press release.
Yeah, I don't remember that press release either. But you have to remember, Captain, these people like regulation. They like control. They like to make sure everyone is dotting the T's and not dotting the T's. I'm a little high.
Dotting the I's, crossing the T's.
Dotting the I's, crossing the T's, all that jazz, just so they can get their cuts, just so they can see how money is flowing through the world. No, we can't have anyone outside our systems. We've got to be their one and only true system on the face of the earth.
So because of the company's disregard for regulation, it is alleged that Samurai Wallet laundered more than $100 million in criminal proceeds, stated IRS CI Special Agent in Charge, Thomas Fattoruso, F-A-T-T-O-R-U-S-S-O.
Oh, wow.
These
things don't write themselves, apparently. Or do they?
It's not written by me. I can only read the words in front of me.
Fatto Russo.
Special agents with IRS CI New York and IRS CI LA's cyber units. They have cyber units.
They do.
They don't have real units. They have to get cyber ones. They worked with our federal and international law enforcement partners to not only arrest the founders and CEO, but also seize their domain. Samurai Wallet is now closed for business. See, I think what they should do here, and I've titled tonight's show, Dow Now, Brown Cow, because I think they should take a page out of Shapeshift and a page out of Odyssey as far as what they did when they were attacked by the bureaucrats, which is turn this thing into a decentralized autonomous organization.
Oh, did Odyssey actually become a DAO?
That's what my Twitter feed seems to indicate.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it talks about how, hey, we're going to decentralize and make this thing like, I mean, they're still all about fighting the fight, mm-hmm. but it seems to me that is the direction that they're going. You can verify for yourselves, of course. But either way, I think becoming a DAO for Samurai is pertinent, and I also think they should rename it to Ninja.
Oh, interesting.
Because, like, Samurais are like, they're sort of like decorated warriors. You can spot them a mile away, right?
And they are absolutely instruments of the government.
Yes. Whereas ninjas were sort of like the mysterious dark fighters that like would come and go and like disappear and like they were sort of ghost-like, right? And I think that they should samurai should become a DAO and then rename the DAO Ninja.
That'd be cool.
It's my opinion.
With maybe a DJA because, you know, it's Sam Aurai. You got to have some way of misspelling it so that people can easily search it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And they do spell it not the traditional way. Samurai the Wallet is spelled Samourai.
Mm.
Right. So they, you know, throw an extra letter in there. Your spell check will be like, did you mean samurai? And spell it the right way. And you got to be like, nope.
Yeah, and this is just part of a growing trend. I know that Phoenix Wallet, one of the big providers of Lightning Network services, have also left the United States. Anyone out there with a Phoenix Wallet, you better get those Satoshis back on chain because they will no longer serve the U.S. because the U.S. is cracking down left and right.
That's so scary.
So this whole geographical area is about to be left in the dust by the rest of the world with this new technology. And yeah, you're absolutely right to advise that they turn this into a decentralized autonomous organization because, frankly, those are the ones that are going to succeed moving forward because there's no center to destroy. There's no snake. There's no head to cut off of the snake.
603-283-6160 if you'd like to comment on the Samurai Wallet CEO and founders being arrested. We've got more to talk about this particular subject, plus more is on the way about liberty and the pursuit of New Hampshire on Free Talk Live. Stay tuned. Hour number three is next.
Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
FCC, let's do it live.
Free Talk Live.
603-283-6160. 603-283-6160. If you'd like to join us tonight, it is Free Talk Live. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass. Joining me,
Riley.
And Peakless Mountaineer.
Free Talk Live is brought to you by Fork Fest, happening June 13th through 16th at Rogers Campground. I'm sorry, Rogers Campground.
Rogers Campground.
Rogers Campground. You got to roll the Rogers Campground.
Do I have to?
No, but like I just do
because that's what we're about here.
I can't do the really
telling people what they have to do.
Don't tell me what to do, man.
I don't pay you to be the boss of me.
I can't do certain things like the put the two fingers in the mouth, either the thumb and the two finger, and do the really super loud whistle.
I can't do that.
I've never been able to figure that. But I can roll my R's. Right? So I try to do that because I'm making up for my lack of
whistle powers.
Yeah.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I've never seen anyone who can whistle that loudly like that and alter the pitch of the whistle. So it's trade-offs everywhere you go, man.
I'm there. But Free Talk Live, brought to you by ForkFest, June 13th through the 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. ForkFest is decentralized, so there's no ticket cost, and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial website, forkfest.party.
Wait, no one's in charge of ForkFest? How will we know what to do?
That's forkfest.party. We'll just have to figure that out when get there, man. All right.
Sounds like a plan.
It'll be up to us to figure out what to do. And in fact, I suggest if you would like to see an event at ForkFest, be the event you would like to see. Put it together. If you think it's a good idea, if you think it's good enough that you'd want to go to it, then it should be good enough for you to want to put it on and possibly participate in one of Earth's freest markets, which occurs at ForkFest and ForkFest. So,
free markets? Why, that's not KYC compliant.
We could have a free market where it's no not KFC one has identified either. Themselves.
You don't get mashed potatoes or biscuits or anything with it. It's, you know, you don't get a choice between extra crispy and original recipe. It's not KFC compliant either.
Mm.
So we were talking about Samurai, and I wanted to mention there's a follow-up article. Samurai did nothing wrong. Self-custodial tools are not money transmitters. This is a reaction to the indictment charge against the Samurai developers a couple of days ago. And the patently absurd distortions of reality, prior regulatory clarification, and the functionality of the software to categorize them as a money transmission business. So we know that the announcement was made, Justice Department, that Keon Rodriguez and William Hill had been arrested and charged with operating Samurai Wallet, quote, an unlicensed money transmitting business, unquote, that executed, quote, unlawful transactions, unquote.
We've also decided to put people in jail for building walls that are not transparent. Because if you're doing nothing wrong, you have nothing to hide.
So as an editorial, this says, FCC, the Justice Department, full stop. Except FCC isn't what they wrote.
Mm.
I only saying FCC because I can't say the word they wrote on radio.
Oh, so someone's censoring your speech, Captain.
Yes, the FCC is.
Ah.
And that's why I used them as a cuss word.
Indeed.
So he says, F the Justice Department, full stop. At no point did Samurai custody user funds, did it have control over user funds, and especially did not execute any transactions on behalf of the user. It is a completely self-custodial wallet in every way. They, from day one, were completely uncompromising in that with every feature they have ever implemented. They are now being charged with conspiracy to commit money laundering with a maximum sentence of 20 years. And one count of conspiracy to operate an unlicensed money transmitting business with a maximum sentence of 5 years. This is literally insane.
So this is exactly the same as charging Sears for selling you a wallet because you bought drugs with the money that you put in that wallet. Like, literally, yeah. That is what this is.
It's just insanity.
They gave you a wallet.
Yeah.
Now, that wallet was a privacy wallet. Sure. Great. But it didn't... They did none of these things. They didn't launder money. They didn't move money. They didn't have this money. Ever. They just gave you the ability to have your own money.
Let's look at some of the language used in the press release for these arrests. Samurai unlawfully combined multiple unique features to execute anonymous financial transactions valued at over $2 billion for its customers.
Who cares?
Well, I care, actually. That's a good thing. In New Hampshire, we have a constitutionally protected right to privacy.
The author here says, what the FCC does that even mean? Unlawfully combined multiple unique features? Question mark. They wrote source code that juggles ones and zeros around and puts them together in a certain arrangement? They wrote a computer program that just creates pieces of data on users' own devices, their own property, and signs it with a cryptographic key before sending it off to the internet for other people's computers to voluntarily download and look at it, maybe forward some ones and zeros to another person's computer. That is a First Amendment protected right, full stop.
Yeah.
According to the author, writing and releasing source code is free speech. The entire absurd argument of unlawfully combining unique features is essentially boiling down to you spoke wrong speak, and yeah. That is not legal. They are literally implicitly stating that certain types of speech or combinations of speech are unlawful, and that is insane.
In a society of vocal people, those who curtail your speech are the ones who are the most powerful.
Yeah. I was referencing earlier the Fourth Amendment, and part of that is the right of the people to be secure in their papers. Why would they put that in there? Oh, because papers are where you keep your information. You have, right, in theory, a right to be secure in your information.
Like deeds, birth certificates, or any sort of certificates you may have.
Any information, any kind of paper, they have no right to seize it. They have no right to surveil it unless they at least go through their what's called due process by getting a judge to sign off on a warrant. And they don't like doing that.
Yeah. Samurai does not create addresses for users. The user's own wallets do, full stop. Samurai's servers have no part in generating addresses for users. That is a factually incorrect statement. As well, the framing of supervises and facilitates transactions is very intentionally framing. They ultimately have no control over the transaction construction process other than being a passive message passer. They're just taking, it's like, you know, dropping a letter in the mailbox and it being passed off to the mailman to drop in your mailbox. That's it. They're just passing information, passing data. The internet does that all day and all night. Nobody's going after Microsoft. Nobody's going after, Intel. Nobody's going after all the large network companies that own all this infrastructure.
Yeah. No one goes after any of the cell phone companies because of the conversations that go on cell phones.
Right.
No one goes after the postal service for being the largest transmitter of drugs on the planet.
Of course not. They're the paid drug cartel for the government. They're the special elite class.
At no step in the process do they gain control over the transaction users construct, the ultimate destination of the transactions, which are to themselves, are entirely decided by users. The authoritarian, the authorization of the transaction is approved solely and exclusively by the users themselves. So not involving Samurai in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. So you allowed other people to transmit value between each other.
Yes.
Without our permission and without giving us a slice of what they were transmitting. How dare you?
The press release goes on further to specifically single out Whirlpool and Ricochet as the two features in question. Ricochet, first of all, being classified, or at least implied to be, a form of money laundering or some kind of illegal transaction structure, is insane. Ricochet is literally just a series of transactions in a chain sending money to yourself.
You're interfering with our illegal spying.
How dare you?
Literally every single wallet in existence for Bitcoin is capable of creating a chain of self-spends like this. Every single one of them. You just keep sending your own Bitcoin to a new address in the wallet over and over. This is money laundering? This is what's illegal? He questions. Is spending my money to myself, making no transaction to any external entity or interacting with any other party illegal? They reiterate their go FCC yourself portion.
Well, you put that $20 from your topmost drawer into your wallet, and then You put it from your wallet into the topmost drawer of your bedstand, and then you put it back in a different wallet. That is clearly money laundering.
How dare you?
He continues to ask, this is absolutely patently insane. So are all wallet providers facilitating money laundering
like
then?
Like Bitcoin.com or Coinomi or...
Is this the insane road that they're going to try and walk down, setting precedent with this case?
I sure hope not, because it's really bad if they do.
You know, if they would apply the same rules to everybody, that'd be fine with me. You'd have to shut down Coinbase. You might not make friends with BlackRock if you did that.
They also, in the indictment, claim Samurai, as a money-transmitting business, had an obligation to apply KYC and AML regulations on their users. They are not a money-transmitting business, full stop. Again, he loves using full stop at this. At no point does Samurai take custody or have control over the capability to transact themselves unilaterally with users' funds. To claim that they are money transmitting business and that they have obligation to collect and enforce KYC and AML regulations is to argue that every self-custodial wallet and service in the entire ecosystem falls under the auspices of money transmission regulations.
I'd also like to point out that it's impossible for them to do that. Like, they have no control of what people do with this software. They simply don't. Like, even if they, you know, somehow flipped a switch, became pure evil, and wanted to do everything that the government wanted them to do as far as spying on everyone on Earth, they simply couldn't. It's just not possible.
Yeah.
So to say you had an obligation to do this thing that was impossible, it's pretty absurd.
The end of the article says, if you haven't already grown up, now would be a good time to do so. The serious issues like this we are going to deal with moving forward into this cycle are infinitely more important than stupid Twitter drama. So that was, who is this written by? It's written by Shinobi over at BitcoinMagazine.com. I'll post a link to the article on our socials.
Yeah, but, good guy, that one. And I'd also like to point out, it's part of the case law now that if you went to a know your customer service,
yep,
you intentionally gave up your right to privacy.
That's really sad.
That's part of case law now.
Wow, that's really sad. That's really bad too, because they're taking away our right to privacy by not allowing us to have the money we want.
Well, and this from torrentfreak.com, U.S. know your customer proposal will put an end to anonymous cloud users.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Oh, and just a quick note for anyone who wants to look that one up. It's the Grotowski case in Fifth Circuit. But yeah, so on the one hand, you have to use Know Your Customer. On the other hand, if you do, you're just willingly giving up your right to privacy.
Late January, the U.S. Department of Commerce published a notice of proposed rulemaking for establishing new requirements for infrastructure as a service, LAAS, or IAS, sorry. The proposal boils down to a know-your-customer regime for companies operating cloud services with the goal of countering the activities of foreign malicious actors. Yet despite an overseas focus, Americans won't be able to avoid the proposal's requirements, which covers CDNs, virtual private servers, proxies, and domain name resolution services, among others. Now, what does that mean to the layman? Well, it's long been the case that access to certain services, whether on or offline, will only be granted when customers prove their identity.
That's
By the way, CDN is a content delivery network.
Yes, thank you. Often linked to financial products, but in many cases, basic money and goods transactions carried out online. Handing over a name, address, date of birth, and similar details can increase confidence that the deal will more than likely go according to plan. In some cases, especially when buying restricted products, proving identity can be a condition of sale. I think, like, you go to a car dealership and buy a car, you got to, like, show, you know, some ID, that kind of stuff. You want to get a bank loan, you want to get a loan to buy a car, buy a house, whatever, you they get all up in your business.
Mm-hmm.
No, all up. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are looking at, they want every, it's like you're being raided by the FBI. They want all of your bank account information. They're going to go look at your transaction history. They're looking at all of your transactions throughout your entire financial life that have been on record.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks.
It sounds like it does suck. Like, how, oh my God, it's like, oh, how can these people think to get away with this? I mean, do they think they own the money supply? It sure sounds like they do.
Well, yeah. And then, like, you know, the mortgage companies or the agents that you work with when you're trying to get a loan, they're like, well, the law says we have to. I'm just doing my job.
Yeah, doing my job.
As far as what do they think? I mean, they think that whatever they say goes, period, full stop. They also think that since they put in so much work to create the internet, they get to say absolutely how it gets developed.
Yet for many years, companies operating in the online space have been happy to do business with customers without knowing very much about them at all.
That's how money works.
I know. Like,
that's how money's supposed to work.
That is literally the whole point. Like, if I know you, if you're in my Dunbar number of people, then I can keep track of how many favors I do for you. If you're not in my Dunbar number, then I have to have something else to keep track so that I don't get taken advantage of. That's why we have money.
Well, and because, I think of,
like, a gold coin proves that someone got some service or good that was worth handing over this thing that is hard to get.
I think of, when I think of the freest markets that exist outside of something like, you know, getting on the Onion Network and finding some of these, you know, hidden sites using Tor and all that kind of stuff. I think of flea markets. I think of garage sales, yard sales, this type of thing. Now, what happens? You drive through a neighborhood and you notice that you know, in the driveway, on the lawn, some family has a bunch of stuff put out on tables, in the lawn, et cetera, and so on. They got some kind of a sign that says yard sale, rummage sale, you know, that kind of thing. And you go, oh, look, some people are selling some stuff. You've never met these people before. You walk onto their property. You look around at the stuff they have. You find something you want. Maybe it's got a price on it. Maybe you got a haggle. Whatever it is, right? You do that. And then you hand over some cash or walk away with the good.
Sounds like money laundering to me.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So much money laundering right there.
The article continues, in some cases where companies understand that a lack of friction is valuable to the customer, an email address has long been considered sufficient. If the credit or payment card eventually used to pay for the product has enough credit and isn't stolen, there seems to be little to be concerned about. For many governments, however, any level of anonymity has the capacity to cause concern. And if that means unmasking everyone to identify a few bad actors, so be it.
I thought
Except, of course,
wear masks.
Sorry, what?
I thought they wanted us to wear masks. No, they want to unmask everybody.
Well, no, they want us to wear masks, but they want us to be unmasked when it comes to anything to do with money.
Oh, I see. They don't
want to track every penny that
you
spend.
They don't want to know that if Captain and I are trading money for marijuana or something.
They want to arrest me if I have a rummage sale.
It must be so hard for an authoritarian. On the one hand, they want to be able to identify everyone uniquely. On the other hand, they don't want you to have unique identifiers like a face. It's got to be a rough life.
Government
Social Security
is an insipid organization.
Don't worry, you'll all get a stamp every, you know, before too long.
As long as your Social Security number is on the front of your mask.
What does that
so
even,
we can identify.
What does that even mean, anyway? Social Security. Does that mean if I go out and get drunk and make an ass of myself in front of a bunch of people in a social situation that they're going to bail me out?
No, not at all.
Because to me, that sounds like Social Security.
I know.
When you're 65.
Or older. But no, they don't even do that. They don't even do that.
Well, like most things the government does, it does the exact opposite of what it claims.
So it's socialist insecurity.
Yes.
When you're claiming it.
Yeah. So it is antisocial and it creates insecurity. So the fact of the matter is that instead of having people be responsible for themselves and then have the choice of either putting away money for retirement or being nice enough to their kids that their kids will then support them when they can no longer work, instead you have the government being the parental figure for everyone, and that keeps us in a situation where we don't have to be nice to each other.
Government welfare is slavery. This so-called security system is not secure at all. It's not financial securely. It's not financial security. It's not going to give you any financial security. It's going to incentivize poverty.
Mm-hmm. And they keep, you know, putting people in fear by saying that the Social Security network, oh, it might not be there for you. So they're continuously making people insecure about their own retirement.
Of course they are. The more they can incentivize you to be poor, the better they can control you in the name of...
And afraid.
We're going to give you crumbs. We're going to give you a living wage. We're going to give you a basic income. Don't you worry.
If this proposal is adopted, it will establish a new set of requirements for infrastructure as a service provider, often known as cloud infrastructure providers, to deny access to foreign adversaries. The premise is relatively simple. By having a more rigorous sign-up procedure for platforms such as Amazon AWS, for example, that's Amazon Web Service, the risk of malicious actors using U.S. cloud services to attack critical infrastructure or undermine national security can be reduced, the Bureau of Industry and Security noted in its announcement late January. 603-283-6160. Are you afraid of foreign actors using Amazon Web Services? Give us a call. It's Free Talk Live. The final half hour still to come. Yes, welcome back. It is Free Talk Live. 603-283-6160. There's probably still time if you want to call. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass, joining me.
Riley.
And Peakless Mountaineer.
Without further ado, let's go to, I believe, we have Footloose calling. Footloose, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, man, how you doing?
Just plugging away.
Yeah. What's going on in the world of Footloose that's got you calling Free Talk Live?
So you guys popped up in my feed. I don't know why you haven't popped up in forever.
Yeah.
The first time in months.
Shadow banning.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah, I'm shadow banned too. But so popped up and I was listening and I'm like, wait a second, it's live. I can call. I got a little bit of a situation going on here.
All right, what's up?
So, were you at Ian's sentencing?
I was.
Yep.
I was there the first day, they didn't do the sentencing. So.
Oh, right. Yeah, they pulled the bait and switch.
Yeah, the bait and switch day. But everybody was there. There was, you know, a ton of people there. And Jason Gerhard, representative, Gerhard and I got arrested in the lobby.
Oh, for filming, yes.
Correct.
Right, yeah, you guys went there with some cameras to sort of challenge the ruling that you cannot film in a federal facility, right?
Thank you for your service on that.
It was, because I researched all the rules and everything, and they're trying to apply a local rule, 83.8, which governs courtroom procedure, civil and criminal procedure, right? That would be inside the courtroom. And they're applying it outside the courtroom because there's a poster in the lobby that says we're allowed to record. So we challenged it, got arrested, charged with disobeying. And then at our arraignments, we were recording again, and both of us again got arrested. This time we were charged with disorderly. Then we had our trial scheduled. I'm trying to give you guys the cliff notes.
Yeah.
We had our trials. We just had our trials. I was there the day before to document the poster in the lobby to see if it was still there. I come to my trial. they give me another disorderly ticket for the day before when I came to document the lobby that there was a poster there saying we could record.
Wow.
And
that's ridiculous.
Long story short, Mr. Gerhard went first. He was found guilty. I went. I was found guilty. And at one point during my my trial, I got the judge to let me get my phone, because, you know, they don't let you bring your phone, even if you're representing, even though there's a rule that says you're allowed to bring your electronics.
Yeah.
That's how I got the judge to let me bring my phone upstairs.
Okay.
And as you know, if you were following my whole four-stage plan, the plan was to get my phone in the courtroom and start recording.
Right.
So I told the judge that I can't promise that at some point I won't start recording. She said, well, you can't. But I said, okay, whatever. I'm just telling you. And so she let me get the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I bring it up. I get found guilty. And I was like, you know what? I'm done with this crap.
Mm-hmm.
I'm walking out of here. In the middle, you know, at the end, she just said guilty, but she was still doing some of the sentencing stuff and whatever. I grab my phone, hit video, hit start recording, and start cussing out the judge and the prosecutor. And I've been good. I've been able to not get myself tanked by saying what I said.
Yeah.
But I start recording, and then the judge is like, hold him in contempt. I get surrounded by U.S. Marshals and court security.
Oh, my God.
And then the witness in the case who has been arresting us this whole time, Department of Homeland Security Officer Michael Plant, he comes over and grabs my phone. And we start, like, you know, hand wrestling for the phone, and I get to shut it off, and he grabs it with both hands, rips it out of my hand, right?
Yep.
So then he says, they're like, get out of the building. I said, give me my phone. He said, I'll give it to you outside. I get outside.
He's not going
to
give
me. He doesn't give me my phone.
Right.
I run to my car, get my recording device. He comes out, and he says, the judge confiscated your phone.
Oh,
and
wow.
So
that's absolutely crazy.
I was like, I want a receipt. They said you can get a receipt from the clerk. I call the clerk the next day. Nothing. No contempt charge. Judge has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
So I go to the Norris Cotton building where the DHS guys are operating out of here in Manchester.
Yep.
And I have all this on video. It's all on my channel. And I asked them, what's going on? I want some sort of documentation. He says, I took your phone. I took your phone. And then
liar.
Nothing. They go inside. They run away.
Yeah.
I go back again like a couple days later, and I talk to just the commander himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him for a FOIA. I'm like, I want to do a FOIA request. I want documentation of this thing.
Sure.
And he's just like, oh, no, there's nothing. The guy's not here. Oh, I'm not giving you, I can't give you anything. But they did say they're trying to get a warrant for my phone. So I got mailed today. I filed a motion for reconsideration, and the prosecution objected. And in the last paragraph, they say that I pressed the issue, and I could have been charged with contempt. And then he goes on to say, and then law enforcement, because I asked for a mistrial for the witness in the case,
uh-huh,
jumping up and then grabbing my phone and stealing my phone
right,
while
yeah,
the trial is still ongoing.
Right.
And so he claims that they got a warrant from another judge to search my phone.
Jesus.
And so I'm planning that they're either going to put out an arrest warrant and pick me up, or they're going to subpoena me and I'm going to show up. And then either way, they're going to hold me in contempt until I open the phone, which means I'm going to go to jail and then I'm going to fight it from court and
right,
all that.
Right.
And here's another thing I need to mention before I forget.
Okay.
So in the discovery, the video that they have is the Free Keen video. And
oh, wow,
the prosecutor, I'm talking to the prosecutor and I'm like, he goes, oh, yeah, that's from your organization. And I go, what are you talking about, my organization? I'm like, I have nothing to do with Free Keen.
Hey, like, are you my boss? Like, can I get a raise, bro? I mean, can I get paid at all, really?
It's just crazy how they are now. So apparently they thought I was associated with you guys in some way, and now they're targeting me
yeah,
because of that.
That's so sad. Before we go on, how can our listeners find you and what you're up to and your channel, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so it's Absolute Defiance on all different socials. It would be Defiant Till I Die, at Defiant Till I Die on Twitter and Instagram, Absolute Defiance on Facebook, and the YouTube is where I give all, like, the updates and stuff.
Yeah, because you do the videos and all that kind of stuff. All right. Yeah. So where's your phone now? Do you know?
They said it's safe. We have it. It's safe.
It's safe. Okay.
Yeah, gotta love how they steal from you and then get a warrant to steal from you.
Well, and what Footloose here is going through is what I like to call the monkey dance. Right? This is where the bureaucracy makes you jump through a bunch of hoops.
Yeah, the process is the punishment.
Right. They know that they took his phone. Yeah. They know that it's not right to take a man's phone. They know that they took it, but they're going to hold on to it until he jumps through enough hoops and probably pays a couple of dollars for the privilege of getting his phone back, is my guess.
Oh, you know me, though. I don't comply.
I love it.
Agreed.
Well, they definitely know that it won't be seen as right by other people. Right. Now, they in their hearts probably believe that authoritarianism is good. So I wouldn't say that they know it's wrong.
Which makes them
ugly. They just know they're not supposed to do it.
Which makes them the ugliest people.
Well, here's another thing.
Truly.
And this information recently got sent to Ian because it would affect his case too.
Okay.
Because the first element of the charge is that it happened on federal property.
Right.
And there is no federal property in the state of New Hampshire because the act of cession, right, becoming part of the federal government, there's, and then of course we have the secession movement.
Right.
Well, if there was never a cession, which there never was in New Hampshire, there could never be a secession. So the law on the books since 1883 is RSA 123.1, and that requires the federal government to acquire property from the state of New Hampshire. They have to file an accurate plan of the property that they're going to acquire from us,
mm-hmm.
then with the Secretary of State by a sworn officer, and then they concurrent jurisdiction. Well, I went to the State House, talked to the Secretary of State. That video is up there on my channel, and I got a gold seal certificate stating that the federal government has complied with RSA 123.1.
Oh, wow, that's brilliant.
And the prosecutor is trying to say it's irrelevant. And during my trial, at one point, he said, those are just words on paper.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, so is the Constitution.
Yes,
and
so the Constitution.
So is the whole source of their theoretical power.
I burst out laughing.
Yeah, I bet you did. All right, so what's going to happen next? Do you know?
So next, it's interesting because Earhart, he got his court date for the second disorderly conduct. I have not got a court date for that or the third disorderly conduct in my case.
Okay.
I'm assuming they're going to give me a court date for all of my things at once to kind of consolidate. And so, like I said, there's either an active warrant for my arrest or they're going to send me a subpoena. And I'll go,
yep.
And they will say, open the phone, and I'm going to say, you know, F off.
Yep.
And then I'll go to jail, and I will fight it from there. I'll file a petition for writ of habeas corpus and go down that road.
Will you be sure, like, we're live on Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, 7 to 10 p.m. Will you give us a call when the next thing occurs and keep us updated as this thing goes?
I'll try. Yeah. If you don't hear from me, and if you check my channel, I'm going to at least try to do something at least once a week, once every 2 weeks, if you don't see anything, because I don't post a lot. I don't, you know, I focus on one thing until I get it done. And, you know, if I'm gone, I'm gone, and nobody. Yeah.
So if your channel goes silent, that's the canary in the coal mine that you've been picked up.
Yes.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Footloose calling. Check out his Absolute Defiance channel. Thank you for the call, man. We appreciate you. Keep us updated when you can. Great activist.
Yeah.
I really enjoy his activism.
He does entertaining activism, that's for sure.
He certainly does.
Yeah, he gets kind of a special pass because they damaged his brain in the process of one of these things, so they kind of have to put up with antics to a certain extent, which is, I mean, sad but funny.
Yeah, if you want both somebody doing something, right, you know, engaging with the evil, the behemoth, the government, and standing up for himself and others, you know, check out his channel, Absolute Defiance. Peakless, you wanted to talk about which one? Are we talking about the bank?
The bank.
All right. From the Criminal News Network, I have the article headline that says, FDIC says Republic First Bank is closed by Pennsylvania regulators.
It begins again.
So I remember from, was it a year ago?
Yeah, it was about a year ago. A little over a year ago.
When we had a couple of banks sort of go under
and
get acquired by other banks. What's going on here?
Well, basically, it's the exact same thing. So there was this set of collapses, which to my eye very much appear to be controlled collapses because they specifically targeted all of the banks that had anything to do with cryptocurrency. But the fact of the matter is that the entire financial system is not only morally bankrupt, but the other kind of bankrupt too.
Mm.
So what they did, they passed this bank term funding program that nobody has talked about, which was basically it was like a scaled back QE or bailout, right? So here was the problem. They printed a bajillion dollars, which makes inflation happen. Then they had to hike all the rates in order to make people spend less money, you know, make everyone poor, so that inflation would theoretically go down. Problem was, when you do that, all of the treasuries that allowed them to print that money in the first place are worth less money, which means a bank run is a severe problem, because instead of being able to sell that for what you got it for, you have to sell it at this tremendous loss. So all of a sudden, this, you know, loss that exists but hasn't been made permanent is made permanent. So now you don't have the assets to cover your deposits.
Okay.
So they made the bank term funding program that said, we, the Federal Reserve, whenever you want, we will, I mean, there's a cost for it, but we'll let you redeem all of those treasuries at what you paid for them. Out of the American taxpayer in particular and the world reserve currencies account to pay for that for a year.
Okay.
And now the bank term funding program is over. So First Republic does not have the BTFP to pull its butt out of the fire. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen of the listening audience, there is some confusion, especially if trying to find this story. Apparently, there are two banks. One is called Republic First Bank. That's the bank we're talking about tonight. The other one is called First Republic Bank. And is that the one that collapsed last year?
Yeah, that was one of the ones that collapsed at the end last year.
That's just so interesting that they're all in reverse of each other. Yeah.
So First Republic collapsed first.
Yeah.
And then Republic First was the first to collapse this year?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there you go. Yeah.
So it sounds like this is being done deliberately. Like,
if you own a bank, take the word first off of it. You'll be less likely to collapse, apparently. Like,
the thing is, this is being done deliberately. They want to collapse the financial system in order to make it look... They want to make it look like they're going to do something first. They got to make it look like they're helping out the banks. But now that the lending program is over, they're not going to help out the banks. They want to watch them collapse.
Well, and the thing is, they're being forced to eat their own at this point. For the first time in a century, they're having to compete with something that is not even close to a fiat currency, and that's cryptocurrency. So all of a sudden, when you have something to compare it to, everything collapsing at the same ish rate doesn't look stable anymore. So this is really just the first of many, because they put a one-year Band-Aid on this sucker, and now the Band-Aid's gone, so we get to go back to banks collapsing. And the process of the banks collapsing, it's just consolidation. So like last time, no bank can handle these except the largest bank, which would not be able to absorb anybody else because of how big it is, But because it's an emergency, not only will they be allowed to absorb these banks, but we will pay them millions and millions and millions to do so.
Right, yeah.
Is that how the smaller branch banks are going to collapse too?
Yep.
Yep, right into the awaiting arms of the much larger banks.
Right.
Wow.
Yes.
It's really sad.
Yeah, and the coverage of this on USnews.com had a line that I found really interesting. The bank's failure is expected to cost the deposit insurance fund $667 million.
Wow.
And that got me thinking, okay, this deposit insurance fund, how much money do they have? They have $500 million.
Oh, jeez.
So where's this other 150-ish million, you know, chump change, really, going to come from?
My first thought was when you said 667, I was like,
is that
really just like them rounding up so that we don't say 666.666 million or whatever?
I don't know where U.S. News got the number, but yeah, that's kind of suspicious there. But yeah, so the fund that they've put into the insurance, because that's what this all comes down to, is different kinds of insurance that they've had to do, doesn't have enough to cover just this one, let alone the ones that are coming. So it's down $167 million, and there's more coming.
It's interesting that the opening sentence of this article of the same thing out of CNN says, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, oh, they're a corporation?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought they were like Center or something like FDIC.
Nope. Anyway.
On Friday, said that Republic First Bank has been closed by Pennsylvania state regulators in what the FDIC said was the first U.S. bank failure this year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's interesting wording because if it was just sort of an anomalous thing, right, with no expectation behind it, it would just say in what the FDIC said was a bank failure, right, or the bank failure. But no, they went ahead and said the FDIC said was the first U.S. bank failure this year, implying that they expect more.
It sure sounds like it.
It does sound very much like that, and that's accurate.
My question is, has this sort of thing happened before? And, of course, I think it has. I remember my parents talking about their bank accounts and their mortgages being bought up by other banks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this happened in 2008. It happened in the 70s. Like, okay, we are headed for another very tumultuous time in the financial world. And honestly, it looks like this is the big one because everything that I'm seeing is this is a combination between the Great Depression, the 1970s crisis, and the 2008 global financial crisis all rolled up into one big package.
Well, it's like a turkey melt.
Yeah. Now, it's taken a little bit longer than I expected it to.
Sorry, turkey club, not turkey melt.
Oh, you mean turducken?
No, turkey club.
Oh.
Right, that's a sandwich. It's got like turkey and bacon and lettuce and tomato, and it's just layer upon layer upon layer upon layer.
Mm.
Right, it's all the things thrown together with three levels of bread.
Ah.
Right? Yeah. Sort of like the Big Mac of like, you know, cold cut sandwiches.
Mm.
So like, but I'm just referencing the layers.
Well, this will be a little less tasty.
A lot less.
Yeah,
a lot of people.
Frankly, this is taking longer than I thought it was because there's this thing called the reverse repo facility, which, long story short, it just means a bunch of money that's not out here running around driving prices up. And I thought it would be drained completely by now, and it's still not quite empty. So we're still not seeing the full inflation effect of all the money they printed during COVID.
As a guy who likes to mess around with language and words and stuff, I find it really weird that reverse repo isn't just Oprah, because that's repo backwards, right? You know, or Opier, but just like spell it OPER, right? You know, that would be reverse repo.
It would be, it? Yeah.
Save them a whole word. You know, reverse is a lot of letters for a word. It's not
it
a lot,
sure
but
is.
Like, you know, like, you know,
yeah.
There's a little town in New Hampshire called Walpole, or mm-hmm. Walpole, if mm-hmm. you're not from around here. Otherwise, it's Walpole.
Wobble.
Kind of like Wooster.
Anyway, I've mentioned this to some people. Every time I see a cop car go by, I'm like, you know, I could, on the next time they need to paint their cop cars, I can save them some money. because they currently say Walpole Police. Two words.
So Wapolice.
Wapolice. Yeah, like it would just save everybody a couple of dollars and like make
Waluigi.
You know, Wapolice. Like yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to see the what the market really thinks of this going on, though, just look at the price of Bitcoin. Look at the price of gold.
Yeah.
Compare them to how they've been. Because very simply, those are hedges against the financial system. So however that price is doing is how much the financial world wants to hedge against their current system.
Yeah, this is not financial advice, but if you are earning more than you're spending, if you're not in debt, or even if you are, if you're able to take some portion of money out of every check, $10, $20, whatever it is, put it into something. Something other than dollars, something other than your bank. Put it into gold, put it into silver, put it into crypto, put it into, I don't know, you know, buy, you know, valuable comics or something, right? Buy collectibles. I don't care. But put it into something else because the U.S. dollar is getting worth less and less.
Every day, less and less.
Yeah, there's a couple of good months left of buying time for Bitcoin. Get on it.
We are out of time. Thank you, Riley, for sitting in for Mark Edge today. Thank you, Peakless Mountaineer, as usual. Thank you to all of our listeners and our callers. We appreciate you. If you missed any part of tonight's program, find the archives over at freetalklive.com under the resources tab. Thanks and peace.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.